Okay, right. Many people believe in the possibility of artificial intelligence. That is, they think it is possible to produce intelligence just by programming a computer in the right way. And by a computer, I mean an electronic digital computer, like this very old one, or this one. This is actually the first computer that I had a very long time ago, about 30 years ago. And very nice it was, too. So the thought is that by programming a computer like this, or maybe a robot in the right way, you can produce intelligence, that is, thought and consciousness or mental phenomena. That's what I mean by artificial intelligence. Okay. Now, this expression, artificial intelligence, often means something else. It means programming computers to do things that you and I can do only by being intelligent or by exercising mental powers. For example, playing chess or driving. And this has been very important in recent years. Okay, I'm not going to talk about this, I'm afraid. I'm going to talk about the stronger view that it's possible to produce intelligence, real intelligence, just by programming a computer in the right way. This is a philosophically very interesting claim. Sometimes called strong artificial intelligence. Now, for this to be possible, two things must be the case. First, a computer has to do something that would count as thought or consciousness. It must be possible for a computer to produce mental phenomena. And whether this is possible depends on the nature of mental phenomena. There might be something about the mental that makes it impossible for a computer to produce something mental. A biological organism can produce thought and consciousness, but maybe an electronic computer could not. That would be a very interesting claim if it were true. And there has been a lot of debate and discussion about this claim. Is it possible for a computer to produce thought or consciousness? I call this the question of artificial thought. So, for there to be artificial intelligence, a computer must be able to do something that would count as real thought or consciousness. Okay, but something else must also be the case. There must be something that thinks or is conscious because of what the computer does. There must be an artificially intelligent being. And the reason is that for there to be thought or consciousness is for there to be something that thinks or is conscious. For there to be mental phenomena is for there to be something that thinks, something that has these mental properties. And whether this is possible depends on the nature of thinking conscious beings. And it raises a question, namely, what sort of entity, what sort of thing would an artificial thinker be? Right? So if we program a computer and we produce thought and intelligence, then there must be a thing that thinks or is intelligent or is conscious. What sort of thing would it be? I call this the question of artificial thinkers. This is the question that I want to talk about. This question must have an answer. An artificial thinker must have some nature or other. it must have some properties besides just mental properties. The artificial thinker cannot just think, it must have some other properties as well. Would it be a material thing, for example? Would it be a thing made of matter, a thing that we could see that's made of atoms with a certain weight, and so on? If it would be, which material thing would it be? Which atoms would make it up? Which parts of the computer in the picture would be parts of the thinking being? Or if it would not be a material thing, the thinker, what sort of immaterial thing would it be? So to know whether artificial intelligence is possible, we need to know something about the nature of thought and consciousness, but also we need to know something about the nature of thinking conscious beings. And although the question of artificial thought is much discussed, there's a lot of literature about whether a computer could produce thought, but there's very little literature about what sort of thing would think that thought. There's almost no discussion of the problem of the question of artificial thinkers. By the way, the same question arises in the case of natural thought. An organism can, like this one, right? An organism can produce thought and consciousness. So there must be a thinking conscious being here. And this thinking conscious being must have some nature as well. It must be a material thing or an immaterial thing, and a particular type of material thing or immaterial thing, and so on. And that is the question that the book was about, the book that Benoit was just trying to sell to you. It's a very good book, by the way. I hope it is, anyway. Good. Okay, so I want to talk about this question that's not very much discussed. What would an artificially intelligent being be like? Now, you might want to stop me at this point and ask whether this question does need an answer. I said that if artificial intelligence is possible, there must be something that could be the subject of this intelligence, some intelligent being. Because, I said, for there to be thought or consciousness is for there to be something that thinks or is conscious. And you might wonder, do we have to accept this? Is that true? He says it's true, but is it really? It's fairly clear, I suppose, that for there to be life is for there to be living things. For there to be motion is for there to be things that move. But maybe for there to be thought and consciousness, there need not be a thing that thinks or is conscious, perhaps. And sometimes philosophers question whether there has to be something that thinks, or whether there might just be thought with nothing that does the thinking. They usually ask this question when they read Descartes. You remember the second meditation. Descartes tries to argue for the claim that he exists. Right? He says, I'm thinking, so I must exist. There must be something doing this thinking. Okay. And before we read that, the second meditation, we all think that we exist. But when we read Descartes, we think we're not sure any longer. The way to make a philosopher question or doubt something is to give an argument for it, right? You all believed, before you came today, you all believed that you exist. But now that I'm going to try and convince you that you exist, and now you're not so sure any longer. That's how it is with philosophers. So I think artificial thought needs a subject for the same reason that human thought has a subject. I think these thoughts, the thoughts going on here, the thoughts that I am trying to express in English, these thoughts are the thoughts of someone, and that someone is me. That's just what I mean by me, that I am the thinker of these thoughts is part of the meaning of the word I or me. If these thoughts here have no thinker, then I don't exist. And you don't exist either, excuse me, because I'm not special. So if you doubt whether artificial thought requires a thinker, then you should doubt whether you exist, and you should doubt whether your friends and your mother exist. I'm not saying you shouldn't. Maybe you should doubt that, but I think, it seems to me that we should accept that we exist unless there's a good reason to think otherwise, or a good reason to think that we might be wrong about it. Just as we should accept the reality of physical objects, like this lectern, unless there's a good reason to think otherwise, or to think we might be wrong about it. That's not a very strong argument, but that's the best I can do. So if you really doubt whether you exist, then maybe you should be skeptical about my question. Maybe you don't need to worry about the question of artificial thinkers. But if you think you probably do exist, then you should pay attention to what I'm going to say. All right, what's next? Okay, so this is my question. What could artificial thinkers be? I want to discuss three possible answers to this question. First of all, they might be computers, pieces of computer hardware. Okay, by computers, I mean those physical objects made of plastic and metal and silicon that are nowadays manufactured in East Asia. Maybe that's what we'd think in artificial intelligence. Or maybe they might be material things constituted by computers. Benoit mentioned this view a moment ago, and Jean-Baptiste will talk about it later this afternoon. Or maybe what things might be a computer program. There are other possible answers to the question that I don't have time to talk about. You might ask about them afterwards in the discussion period. Okay. Yes, so maybe programming a computer in the right way would make the computer itself intelligent or conscious. I think this is the most popular answer to the question. Most writers ask whether artificial intelligence is possible by asking whether computers could think. That's a very common formulation of the question of artificial thought. Could computers think? That's a nice, brief, snappy way of putting it. This answer, it also fits with what I think is the most attractive account of natural intelligence, the intelligence that you and I have. Artificial thinkers stand to computers as you and I stand to organisms, or maybe brains. That's how it seems, anyway. And it seems maybe you and I are organisms. You stand to that organism by being that organism. If so, then artificial thinkers are computers. Or if you're not an organism but only a brain, a small object inside your head, then we would expect an artificial thinker to be a part inside the computer, a small physical object inside the computer. Yes. As I said, I think this is the best answer to the question of artificial thinkers, but it's not obviously the right answer. So here is an objection to the hardware view. It has to do with considerations of personal identity. So here is a tempting thought. Call this the first tempting thought. The thought is this. If we program a computer for intelligence, we bring an intelligent being into existence. We don't just make the computer intelligent. We create a new thing, a thinker that did not exist before. And if we close the program, turn off the computer, erase the data, it's tempting to think that we destroy this intelligent being. We don't just deprive it of the property of intelligence, but we destroy it. The thinking thing no longer exists. Okay. Not just that it can no longer think, it is no longer there. But if we did this, these events would not create or destroy a computer or a piece of computer hardware. If artificially intelligent beings are computers, this tempting thought must be wrong. If artificially intelligent beings are computers, then running the program, the intelligence program, makes a previously stupid ordinary computer intelligent, right? This ordinary computer here on the lectern becomes intelligent when I program it in the right way. And when I close the program and erase the data, that makes the computer stupid again, right? Because I haven't destroyed the computer or any piece of computer hardware. The computer merely gains the property of being intelligent or of being conscious and then loses it again, because that's what happens to the computer, to the physical object. Okay, so this tempting thought is incompatible with the computer hardware view. Here is a second tempting thought. Maybe an artificial thinker could move from one computer to another. We could transfer. So if I could program this computer for intelligence, and then I could transfer this intelligent being to Benoit's computer over there. Okay. And to do that, this is the tempting thought. Okay. To do that, I would not need to physically remove some component of the computer and move it across the room and install it on that computer. Maybe I could transfer the thinker just by an electronic data transfer. I could send it as an electronic message, right? Like sending an email. So, this is another old computer, actually. I used to have one of these as well, long ago. The first computer starts to think when we program it, and then somehow we could transfer the thinker to the second computer. Okay, that's the thought. Just in case you couldn't imagine it, I've illustrated it for you. So, suppose this is right. An artificial thinker could move from one computer to another by an electronic data transfer. Now, the problem is, no piece of computer hardware could move from one computer to another in this way. If the thinker were the computer itself, if it were a piece of hardware, it would simply stop thinking, and another computer would start thinking. The second computer would get the first computer's memories and personality and sense of humor and other mental properties. the second computer would mistakenly believe that it was the first computer. It would mistakenly believe that it did the things the first computer did before the transfer. This goes against the second tempting thought. So that the general idea behind these worries is something like this. If a computer could be conscious and intelligent, then it could be a person. A computer could be a person, because a person just is a certain sort of conscious, intelligent being, right? A person is a being with certain special mental properties. That's what we mean by person. And the dominant view among philosophers is that the persistence of a person from one time to another consists in psychological continuity of some sort. So a being in the past or in the future is me, just if that being is psychologically continuous then with me as I am now in some way. So what being is me tomorrow, according to the dominant view, the being that is me tomorrow is the being that can remember giving this talk. It's the being who has inherited my thoughts, my beliefs, my preferences, my sense of humor, and so on, my mental properties. Okay, that's what it is for me to continue to exist. It's for my psychology to continue, right? This is a view that we get from Locke 300 years ago. It's still the dominant view about personal identity over time. You may have come across this view before. But this view is incompatible with the computer hardware view. By the way, this thought is the most common objection to the view that you and I are organisms or animals. This is the view called animalism. It was one of the views that I discussed in that marvelous book that Benoit has got there. Here's the objection. It may sound very sensible to say that you and I are organisms, but it's very controversial among philosophers, and here is why. Suppose we do an experiment, a thought experiment. Okay, we're going to transplant your brain into my head. Okay, I tried to get some people from the medical school to come and do this operation for you on the stage, but Jean-Baptiste told me that was impossible. So you'll have to imagine it. So there we go. So your brain is removed from your head. So that results in a being with an empty head on the left, and it's put into my head. And the question, of course, is who is that being on the right at the bottom? Is it me with a new brain, or is it you with a new body? You understand the question? Yes, okay. Now, what's the answer? Well, the answer that my students give when I ask this question, they say it's you with a new body. Okay. The operation removes you from your own head, moves you across the room, and puts you into my head. Okay. And then it gives you the splendid physique of a middle-aged academic. Okay. And why do they say this? Why is it you with a new body and not me with a new brain? Well, it's because there's psychological continuity. It's because he can remember your life but not mine. Okay. So there's your thoughts, and they might continue in the brain during the operation, and now then they're going on in this being down there. And that being with your brain and my body, he will think that he's you. He will have memories of your life. He will think that he lives in your house and that he is a child of your parents, and so on and so forth. And why wouldn't he be right to think that? That's the tempting thought, anyway. That's the dominant view. Okay, he would be you because he's psychologically continuous with you, but not with me. He can't remember. He has no memories of my life. Okay, he cannot remember giving this talk. He will only remember listening to it in the audience. That's what makes him you. So here's this is the worry about the computer hardware view. Okay, the persistence of a person consists in psychological continuity. That's the dominant view since John Locke in 1694. But the persistence of an organism, this is the objection to animalism, to the view that we are animals, The persistence of an organism does not consist in psychological continuity. We can do the experiment again. Okay, we couldn't do this if we did a real operation, but now we can just do it again. Okay, so there's one organism on the left and another organism on the right. So what happens to the organisms when we remove your brain from your head and put it into my head? Well, it looks like we just move an organ from one organism to another. Okay, one animal loses a part and the other animal gains that part. It's just like transplanting a heart, right? If we transplant your heart into my chest, that organism loses a heart and this organism acquires that heart. Okay, and that's this, and the same happens if it's the brain, it seems. So the reason why it's controversial to say that I'm an organism is that, well, the persistence of a person consists in psychological continuity, so they say. The persistence of an organism does not consist in psychological continuity. It follows that a person could not be an organism. In other words, if we took your brain out of your head, according to the dominant view, you would leave the organism behind. Okay, but an organism cannot leave itself behind. So it follows that you must be something other than the organism. Okay, the person is not the organism, but something else. That is the main objection to animalism, to the view that you and I are organisms. Okay, and the very same objection, or almost the same objection, applies to the computer hardware view. Suppose, once again, the persistence of a person consists in psychological continuity, but the persistence of a computer, of a piece of computer hardware, does not consist in psychological continuity. We can do the experiment again. There's the first computer. We can transfer its thoughts to the second computer, but the first computer stays where it is, and it simply loses its mental properties. The second computer gains those mental properties, but no piece of computer hardware moves from the left to the right. All the physical objects stay exactly where they are. Okay, so if the thinking being could move from that computer to the other one, then the thinking being is not a physical object. Not a computer, not a physical part of the computer. So once again, the persistence of a computer programmed for intelligence does not consist in psychological continuity. Right? You cannot move a computer from here to there by an electronic data transfer. If the dominant view is right, then a computer could not be a person. Right? Because if we program the computer for intelligence, then the intelligent being, the person, could leave that computer behind. But again, the computer cannot leave itself behind. The computer has a proper, sorry, the person, the artificial person in the computer, the artificial person would have a property that the computer itself does not have, namely being transferable by an electronic data transfer. So a computer could not be a person. Programming a computer could never make the computer itself intelligent. The intelligent being must be something other than the computer, something that could move from one computer to another. Or again, something that would be destroyed if we shut down the program and erased all the data. I hope that's at least a little bit clear anyway. So the thought is, if a computer could think, it would be a person. The persistence of a computer has nothing to do with psychological continuity. So the hardware view implies that the persistence of a person has nothing to do with psychological continuity. So the hardware view implies that the dominant view of personal identity from Locke is wrong. It implies that personal identity has nothing to do with psychological continuity. Now, I think the dominant view is wrong. I think Locke was mistaken. I think the persistence of a person has nothing to do with psychological continuity. That's my view. That's because I think you are an organism. Okay, but that's a minority view. That's an unusual view. Most philosophers tell me I'm wrong about that. And if I am wrong, then the hardware view must also be wrong. That would be a very important fact. That would be a cost, so to speak, of the hardware view, or a disadvantage. Okay. That's the hardware view. I'll say just a little bit about the constitution view. The thought is that an artificial thinker would not be a computer or a piece of computer hardware, but something else, namely a material thing constituted by a computer. And likewise, in the case of natural thinkers, a natural thinker is not an organism, but rather a material thing constituted by an organism. Okay, what does that mean? What does constituted by mean? This is jargon. Here's what it means. Here's an example. Okay, here's a lump of clay. Now, imagine that we knead and squash and model the clay into the shape of, let's say, David Bowie. Okay, this is a rather creepy picture, I think. I like it for that reason. Just suppose we do that, all right? And then later, we become dissatisfied and we squash the statue again back into a lump. All right, now, a tempting thought, once again, is that when we model the clay into that shape, we do not just change the shape of the lump of clay, but we create a new object. So the sculptor there, I think that is the sculptor, right? He doesn't just take a lump of clay and change its shape. He creates something new, a sculpture, a statue, Okay, the statue is created. It did not exist before. And when we squash the statue, we don't just change its shape. We destroy it. The statue no longer exists. That's a tempting thought, anyway. Okay, so we've brought a clay object into existence and then destroyed it. Okay. But what about the lump of clay itself? We haven't created a lump of clay, and we haven't destroyed a lump of clay. If that's right, then the lump of clay is one thing, the clay statue is something else. They're two different objects because they have different careers or different histories. The lump was there before the statue was there. The statue was destroyed, but the lump continued to exist. So the lump is not the statue. But they're both made of clay. They're both made of the very same clay. While the statue exists, the statue and the lump are physically exactly the same. They've got all the same atoms. The atoms are arranged in the same way. They have all the same parts. There's no physical difference between them. Okay, and those who have this tempting thought describe this by saying that the lump constitutes the statue. And the thought is that an artificial thinker stands to the computer in the same way as a clay statue stands to the lump of clay that it was made from. Okay, so once again, you've got two things, the computer and the thinker, both physical objects made of the same atoms at the same time. Okay? And likewise, when we program the computer for intelligence, we bring a new conscious being into existence, much as by modeling the clay, we bring a statue into existence. And closing the program and erasing the data destroys the conscious intelligent being, though it does not damage the computer. The computer is still there, right? Much as squashing the clay statue, it destroys the statue, but does not damage the lump of clay itself. It's still there. And maybe an intelligent being could be constituted first by one computer and then by another computer. Maybe it could move from one computer to another by an electronic data transfer, just as perhaps in the brain transplant experiment, a person, you, could be constituted first by one organism and then by another one, and by a brain in between during the operation. I hope that makes some sense anyway. I think this is a bit of a crazy view, but it's quite a popular one, actually. Here are some implications of the constitution view. I won't say very much. It's a long story. It implies that an artificial thinker would be physically just like the computer constituting it. Okay. In the same way that the statue of David Bowie is physically just like the lump of clay that constitutes it. Okay. But the artificial thinker is psychologically or mentally different from the computer. Right? The computer itself is not conscious or intelligent. Only the thing the computer constitutes is conscious and intelligent. Nobody wants to say that there are two conscious intelligent beings there, the computer and something else that the computer constitutes. That would be a silly thing to say. So the computer is not conscious, but it constitutes another thing that is conscious and intelligent. And this means that a thing's physical properties do not fix or determine its mental properties. Things can be physically the same, but mentally completely different. And this goes against, for example, this so-called weak supervenience principle. Necessarily, if things have the same physical properties, then they have the same intrinsic mental properties. That turns out that must be false, because the computer here has no mental properties, but the thing it constitutes is intelligent and conscious, even though they have the same physical properties. In fact, this means that a computer constituting a conscious being would be a zombie. I mean, a zombie in the sense that philosophers talk about, not a zombie in the sense of zombie films in the cinema, right? A philosophical zombie. That is, an unconscious being physically identical to a conscious being and with the same behavior. Okay, but lacking in consciousness. Now, there's a big debate about whether zombies in this sense are in any sense possible. That's very controversial. Some people say yes, some people say no. There's a debate about that. If there could be artificial consciousness and the intelligent being would be constituted by a computer, then there could be zombies. In fact, the computer itself would be a zombie. It would be physically just like an intelligent, just like a conscious being, with the same behavior, but have no consciousness itself. In fact, if we apply this view to ourselves, it means that there actually are zombies. There's not really, in fact, any artificial intelligence, but there's natural intelligence. I'm conscious, okay. On the constitution view, I am not an organism. I am a physical object constituted by the organism. Okay, so I'm conscious, but the organism is not conscious. There are not two conscious beings here, me and the organism. It follows that this organism here is a zombie, because it's physically identical to a conscious being, but has no consciousness itself. Okay. In fact, there are as many zombies as there are human beings. Okay. There are about 100 zombies in this room right now. I don't think very many friends of artificial intelligence would be happy with that conclusion. There's a lot more to say about the constitution view, but that will do for now. So, just to remind you, I said I was going to discuss three answers to the question. First, that artificial thinkers would be computers. Second, that they would be material things constituted by computers. Third, they might be computer programs. Call this the program view. So the thought is that artificial thinkers would not be material things at all. They would be immaterial things. It's the program running on the computer that would think and be conscious. Let's have a look at this view. I think this view has many, many problems. I think this view is mad, actually. I will discuss just one problem that I have with this view. Suppose we ask, what is a program? Okay, a program, so I was told anyway, a program is a sequence of instructions that a computer can follow. For example, the program that I use to make these slides is called Microsoft PowerPoint for Mac 2011 version 14.0, copyright 2010. It's you too can use this program on your computer, though I wouldn't recommend it. It's a terrible program. Every 5 minutes it crashes. It makes me tear my hair out. It's terrible. But the point is, it's the very same program that millions of other people have also bought from the Microsoft Corporation. I hope the Microsoft Corporation is not one of the sponsors of this talk. But the point is that a computer program is a sort of universal. It can run on many different computers at the same time. And you might imagine that in the future, the Microsoft Corporation produces a program for artificial intelligence, Microsoft Intelligence for Mac 2051, version 3.0, and so on. Just imagine in the distant future. Okay, I predicted it. You heard it, right? And you can all buy this program and download it from the internet or whatever technology we have in 30 years' time. And, okay, Microsoft Intelligence for Mac 2051 is a computer program. That is a sequence of instructions. And, well, could a sequence of instructions be a conscious thinking being? Could it be tired or hungry or bored or interested? I doubt it. Well, the sequence of instructions exists as soon as it's written down. The program exists as soon as the sequence of instructions exists. When it is first thought of or written down, that's when the sequence of instructions comes into being. The sequence of instructions could exist even if it never runs on a computer. Okay. In fact, it could exist even if there were never any computers at all. You could still have that sequence of instructions that a computer could run if there were any computers. So if artificial thinkers are programs, sequences of instructions, then they could exist even if there were no computers. And artificial intelligence could exist even if there were no computers. Or at least the beings that would be intelligent because of computer programming could exist even if there were no computers. That sounds completely wrong. And there are many other worries about the view that a computer program could think or be conscious, but we can talk about them afterwards, perhaps. All right, so here's a sort of summary of what I've said. So the hardware view rules out the dominant view of personal identity over time, namely the psychological continuity view. The constitution view implies that there are 100 zombies in this room. The program view implies that there could be artificial intelligence even if there were no computers. I don't like any of these consequences at all. But I think the hardware view is the best of a bad lot. I think it's the least bad answer to the question of artificial thinkers. But I'm not sure whether it's a good answer. I'll just say one last thing about this. Suppose, once again, that an artificial thinker is a computer or a part of a computer, a certain physical object. Okay, what determines the boundaries of an artificial thinker. How big would the artificial thinker be? Which parts of the computer would be parts of the intelligent being? So here's my old Mac once again. Nobody would say that, suppose we could program this machine for intelligence and thereby create an intelligent being or make the computer intelligent, what computer are we talking about? Would the thinking being have the keyboard as a part? Would the screen and the mouse and the power cable be parts of that intelligent being? That seems wrong. It seems that the thinker would have to be some other part inside the computer. But which part would it be? It's very hard to say which parts of the of that computer would be parts of the conscious being. I don't know how to answer that question. But it would have to have an answer if the hardware view were true. Now, of course, the same question arises about natural thinkers. Which parts of the natural thinker, what determines the boundaries or the parts of a natural thinker? Which parts of that organism are a part of that conscious, intelligent, thinking being? This is also a hard question, but I think it's an easier question to answer. It's the obvious thing to say, I think, is that the thinker, the conscious being, is the organism. It's the human being. And we know roughly what determines the boundaries of an organism. The organism extends all the way out to its skin and no further, approximately. And that's because that's the extent of the organism's metabolism and immune system and other biological processes. That's what makes something an organism. So we know what determines the boundaries of a natural thinker. It's something to do with metabolism and immune system and biological processes. We don't know what determines the boundaries of an artificial thinker. That, I think, is a serious worry. I'll stop at that point and we can have some discussion. Thank you.